From the age of six, Alex Pask was essentially known as Alex the Hockey Player. That was her identity. The dream was to represent England and stand proudly listening to that national anthem play out. Except it didn't play out that way. The pressure to perform at the England under 16 trials was far too much and she didn't make the team. Alex fell out of love with the game, suffered from depression, and she lost her identity. How could you be Alex the Hockey Player if you weren't playing hockey? Fast forward to now, and Alex might not be the hockey player she always dreamed she'd be. She's arguably much more. In 2015, at the age of 24, she founded the Mintridge Foundation, a charity that runs programs bringing together elite athletes and young people to encourage and support. She is also nominated at this year's Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year Awards in the Grassroots Awards category, a real testament to everything she has achieved. This is Alex's true identity. Alex, it's a very big welcome to the show ahead of the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year Awards. The nomination deadline closed a matter of hours ago, less than 2 hours ago, actually, as we record. Are things starting to become a little bit more real?
Yes, I mean, I look back to about a month ago when I found out, and it's all just been this huge whirlwind since it happened. But now, yeah, it's days away till the glitzy award ceremony, so I'm really excited about it. And yeah, it is a bit more real now.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned in the intro, you're in the Grassroots Award category. Alongside the likes of Stacey Copeland, has been on this show before, and the award winners will be announced on November the 1st. That's this upcoming Thursday. But firstly, what has it been like in the first place just to get the nomination and to get the recognition that's been coming your way of late?
Oh, this is a tough question. I think recognition-wise, I'm looking at a much much more broader scale for the likes of the charity and the charity as a whole. It's just put us on this new pedestal where we're getting national recognition. We've moved from a very small charity based in Northamptonshire to being in the Sunday Times, which is huge, and in turn, more schools are hearing about us, hearing about the work that we're doing and want to become involved, and more corporates are coming on board to help with the funding side. So I just can't take it all in at the moment.
Exactly. And the charity, the Mintridge Foundation, your baby, if you like, we'll sort of talk in greater depth about what work it does and what the whole purpose is of the charity. But I kind of want to start with focusing on you, because I think your own story is maybe a key part to understanding why you do what you do now.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let's start about Alex the Hockey Player and their identity. Who is Alex the Hockey Player?
Alex the Hockey Player was the six-year-old girl that picked up a stick and completely fell in love with the game. And the ambitious person that I was at a very young age and still am, made that aim to play for England. And so I was playing week in, week out. Mum driving me to lengths of the country to be able to pursue that dream. And I was doing it. I was loving it. And as you say, I was Alex the Hockey Player to absolutely everybody. And I managed to achieve the first goal of getting to those trials in November 2006 at the under 16 England trials.
So would you have been 15, 16?
Yes, yeah, I was 15 then. And I was completely overwhelmed with the pressure. And in turn, I didn't get in. And looking back now, I was definitely good enough. I mean, I was in the top 32 of the country, but I just got it into my head that everyone else was there, was so much stronger than me, so much better than me. And I just completely buckled under that pressure and didn't get selected, and in turn had a few injuries, and I then started to play because I had to play, not because I wanted to play. And I always say sort of my biggest love of all became my worst enemy, and I haven't really picked a hockey stick up since, which is just, well, it's devastating just to think back to how much love I had for it. So that was really the biggest push behind Mintridge. I think I mentioned how supportive my family were, but they didn't necessarily know what to do when I didn't get selected. And I think if I'd had a mentor that had been there, done that, got all the scars and could tell me, you know, it's okay, many people go through this, and coping mechanisms, I would still be playing today. And so that's where the idea came from, is to sort of bridge that gap between elite sport and youth, and the one-on-one nature of our programs.
Mm-hmm. I want to touch on that pressure side of things, because it's obviously something that comes in all types of sport, whether you're talking at the elite level or the amateur level,
yes,
whatever it may be. Was that pressure that you put yourself, or maybe pressure that you thought was coming from other corners, be it parents, be it coaches, whatever?
Oh, massively, yeah. So I put an insane amount of pressure on myself in all walks of life, sport particularly, and I still do today. But I think the difference is now I've created coping mechanisms and I reframe that pressure and see it as a positive. And I definitely didn't have it. I thought it was coming from my my parents and my coaches. I just wanted to do well for them, particularly for my mum, who had travelled the length of the country. I wanted to do it for her, but there was absolutely no pressure from them at all. And looking back, I wish I realised that they just wanted me to be enjoying it and to be doing what I loved. So that's the hardest thing, I think, when I look back and think about that side.
Yeah. Can you remember what was going through your mind when you didn't make it?
Yes. I just remember thinking, everyone's going to think I'm a disappointment. And from my friends to my coaches to my parents. And it's so silly to think that, because my hockey coach at school sent me a card straight away saying, don't be disappointed, you're the first girl at this school to ever get that far. But at the time, nothing was making me happier. I was just so angry and disappointed with myself. And I think also because I had never not got in any team. I'd always been in the A team in all sports. I wasn't very used to it, which...
Was that maybe the first, I don't want to say failure, but maybe personal failure,
yeah,
to you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And did you know how to deal with it?
No, not at all. And now looking back, I had that long-term vision of getting and playing for England, singing that national anthem, that's all I ever dreamt of. And I think now I needed to look back, and I should have had those short-term targets and goals to get there and how to cope with every new scenario. And I just didn't think I was good enough at the end of the day, and I know now I was. So.
We obviously talk about the identity of Alex the hockey player,
yes,
but after that, what did your identity become?
So I really struggled for 4 years, but I didn't really realise that I was struggling. And I went off travelling. I went and coached hockey abroad, so I still had that connection to hockey. But it was almost me telling everyone what I used to do, and it wasn't what I'm doing on a regular basis anymore. I still had that infectious love for all sports and following all sports. So I think that shines through with what I'm doing now. This is actually the path I was meant to be on, not to be an elite hockey player. I was actually just meant to be as part of sport as a whole. So those next 4 years were really, really tricky, but I didn't talk about it enough, and I don't think I realised exactly why I was so low at the time.
Exactly. I mean, something we talked about just before we started recording is how you can be going through all sorts of depressive states but not actually realise it. What point did you realise not everything was well?
Something as stupid as a breakup with a boyfriend made it all come out in the wash. And that was 4 years after those England trials. And then I started to really look at how I'd been feeling and what the main causes were for that. And it was that loss of identity, that loss of Alex, the hockey player. And I really worked hard to find a new identity and to realise that there is more to Alex Pask than a hockey stick.
Exactly. Yeah. How long did it kind of take you to get back on track? Because obviously you can have your trigger moment and your realisation moment, but it's a lot easier said than done,
yes,
to actually repair your mind after,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I honestly don't think I've been fully better until I started Mintridge, I started it in 2015, so that would have been 9 years after that initial trial. And now I'm seeing the reward and the impact that my story is having on younger people. So that is it's a really good coping mechanism for me as well, and it's helping me massively.
Exactly. And we'll turn on now to,
yes,
the Brainchild, the, yes, Mintridge Foundation.
Yes.
Just give us a quick rundown of the type of work it does and what its aims are.
Yes, so we are a charity with 30 ambassadors, and we deliver mentoring programs in schools with Olympians, Paralympians, and other professional sports stars from individual and team sports. So at the very start, our aim was to help and support up and coming talent to follow a more pain-free journey to the one that I just mentioned, but it's just grown into so much more now, and we could be helping students get into participation of any sport, whether that's getting girls active, getting disabled children into sports that they weren't necessarily aware of, or it could be helping with life skills such as confidence. That has been huge, the impact that we've had there, and even behaviour as well, behaviour of students. So we're really, really flexible in our approach to be able to meet the objectives of different schools and clubs. So, for example, we've had a headmaster ring up last week, and he said we'd like an ambassador to talk about social media anxiety. And because we have such a wide diversity of ambassadors, we can fit the athlete with the story, with the objectives that they want, which is really, really good. And those ambassadors want to give back so much.
Where did the idea behind the foundation, did it all kind of stem from what you went through and then what you think you needed to hear at that time?
Yes, yeah, and it's also I want to make role models relatable to individuals. So I look back, and my role model growing up was Johnny Wilkinson, which is great. He had an incredible work ethic. He was meticulous to his training plan and his devotion to his team. I absolutely loved, but I wasn't male and I wasn't a rugby player, so I needed to find someone more relatable to me. So that's where another idea behind Mintridge came from, is getting athletes into their local areas where children, particularly from say disadvantaged areas where there's very low aspirations. Well, if we can have an Olympian in there with their medals saying I came up from this neck of the woods as well, and I've look what I've achieved, I think that really helps. So yeah, the element of the mentors as well as making them relatable.
How powerful is the voice of an athlete?
Gosh, it's amazing. So a lot of the time, a lot of the messages that they're saying are exactly the same that their teachers and their club coaches are saying. But the fact it's coming from an Olympian, it just makes students listen. It's that wow factor. It's that GB tracksuit. It's that medal that makes them think, wow, I want to listen to them. And it's amazing. It's amazing. It's real life superstars stood in front of them in a school or sat in front of them on a Skype call. And it's that wow factor that they really has an impact.
Exactly. And the Mintridge Foundation has been going since 2015, and it's obviously transitioned into a charity in that time.
Yes.
How hard has it been to get it to where it is now from when you first started?
Wow, so I look back to 2015, where I had this idea and I had to find athletes to come on board and to follow it through. So I was constantly on social media writing messages saying, hi, my name is Alex and I've got this idea, will you come on board? And the likes of Marilyn Okoro, who's our athletics ambassador, I owe so much to her, because she came on board when we didn't have a story, and Pamela Cookie and so on, our England netball ambassador. And now I look to today, and we have athletes coming to us, which is really exciting. So we've done the hard work now, we've generated that awareness, but it's just been a very long process in between. So we've got the ambassadors, which is great, and they have to want to give back, so we're very particular on the ambassadors that we'd like to have. So that's been one learning curve, and just shows and highlights how much we've grown. And then it's been the funding side has been the biggest thing of all. So we started as a limited company, as you said, and we quickly realised we need to change the structure. And in doing so, we're now seeing much more funding coming in, and in the long term, we'll be able to reduce that cost for schools and clubs. So it's working, I hope.
Rough numbers, how many young people has the foundation helped or impacted?
Yes.
In one way or another?
Well, actually, last week we impacted our 40,000th student, which is amazing. So we're seeing so many more, and we want to keep increasing that number, obviously. And then we've worked with 76 young people on the one-on-one basis on some of our other programs, which is the six-month programs. So it's just great to see the diversity in those numbers. And, you know, we've had, out of those 76, we've had one girl selected to represent Great Britain in her sport, which she's put down to the skills that she learned through mentoring, which is brilliant. And at the other side of it, we've had two sisters who were unfortunately left paralysed after a car accident. And they've now joined a local inclusive archery club through the confidence they built from our programmes. So it shows diversity of that, of those 40,000, but we're getting there.
Exactly. I mean, too often, I think people can maybe focus on the sporting athletic side of things. But in terms of helping those young people grow as people, yes, and growing confidence, is that arguably the most important thing that they take away from these?
Yes, exactly. And I think it's something I really didn't envisage when I started. We had an email a few weeks ago from a mother who said that her daughter now picks the phone up to call her granny because of the confidence she learned through our programme. And that wasn't one of our objectives when we started, but it's really, really a telling factor. With our Skype, the nature of our Skype programmes, the parents are always with them, the parents' carers or teachers are always sat with them. And the ambassadors are able to see how much they rely on their parents at the start, for example, and how much that changes towards the end, which can only help it in life as a whole afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Bearing all that in mind, what do you think then are the key messages you try and hammer home or deliver to these young people through the athletes, through the Skype programs, through whatever it might be that the Mintridge Foundation provides?
I think there's two elements to that, really. Resilience is huge in all walks of life, whether that's sporting or otherwise. I think children often just see the athlete on the screen getting that gold medal in that 10-second race, but they don't see what happens behind the scenes, the funding, the injuries, and so on. So resilience is huge. And also the importance of sport and education, or sport and another skill, because if they do want to pursue life and a career in sport, it doesn't last forever in any sense, whether that's from a career-ending injury or whether that, again, the funding side. So we always try to tell students to have that balance, and we do a lot of work with Switch the Play to help endorse that message, who train our ambassadors and help support athletes in transition and become aware of it. So yeah, resilience is huge, and the educational aspect as well.
Something we ended up talking about just purely by chance on the most recent episode we did was the accessibility to a load of sports from primarily a state school point of view versus a private school point of view, because we were talking about Christian Wade and rugby and how rugby has sort of an overwhelming private school background.
Yes.
Is sport as accessible as it should be at a state school level?
No. And I think it's down to, a lot of the time, it's down to the time and the time pressure that's put on teachers, that they don't have the time to look into other sports, to invest their own personal time into it, which is why we like to come in and be able to support that and promote that messages, because otherwise the children just aren't aware of it. It's what they see on the telly, if that's what their families are into, and it's scary to think that, you know, that time is invested into it. We went into a school a few weeks ago where some of the students had to be pulled out because they needed to do a maths or an English exam. I can't remember what it was. So they then lost out on their time with our ambassador, but it's just not seen as the priority. So I just hope that that's going to develop over the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're talking from a biased perspective because we both love our sport, but a lot of the time it was often used as a punishment.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't do X amount of whatever it may be in sport, you've got to do 40 laps of the field, whatever it might be. Do you sense it's starting to change and people are starting to recognise just how important that is?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they're seeing the impact it has in the classroom as well. So those that are, I love the initiative of the Daily Mile that lots of primary schools are doing, because teachers are realising that it actually helps the concentration and so on. So if we can just get that message into everywhere, that would be brilliant.
Again, are we in danger as well of maybe focusing a bit too much on state schools? And because I suppose the story is very much similar at some private schools or grammar schools, whatever it might be. Before we started recording that it's kind of on a case-by-case basis, really. It depends on what each individual school offers. You can't take it as a blanket view. Are we in the maybe danger of seeing it that way a little bit as well?
Yeah, so I'm really keen that we... we keep the structure of the foundation so that we are inclusive to everybody. Students in independent schools need just as much help as students in state schools. It's just in a very, it's in a very different way. And if I look back to my story, I went to an independent school, and therefore that's the reason it started. So if I turn my back on that, then that would just be stupid of me, really. So yeah, we just need to keep that balance.
Yeah, is that where someone has went to an independent school as well, and that's how I got into my sport, then likewise you can't neglect it all the way. Have you found your calling in life?
Yes. Yeah. I look back, and growing up, obviously all I wanted to do was play for England, and that I knew that would be my career. And actually now I'm so much happier doing what I'm doing and following, and I can take other people with me on this journey, whereas that one would have been very much on my own. Yes, it's so important to be passionate about what you do, and that's what, again, we try and tell every student that we work with, whether that's sport or otherwise. And I'm definitely passionate about what I do. Just, I can't describe the little things that give me such a buzz when we go into the different schools and organisations.
But then there's kind of another wider message, if you like, that I pick up from that, in that you shouldn't be afraid to throw plan A out of the window if it doesn't come off for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I also like to ask students what success means for them. And so success for me wasn't going to university. It was pursuing what I'm doing now, but it could be for your best friend. It could be going to get a career in the city, or, you know, success means different things for everybody. And I want people and young people particularly to realise that, and to have the confidence to step away from the mould, which I think I did, but didn't realise I was doing.
Looking ahead to the future then, what are the plans for the Mintridge Foundation long term? Is it still building up the profile and basically all those young people that you can help impact in a positive way?
Yeah, so the biggest focus at the moment is in the UK, and we want to be recognisable and affordable to every school in the country, as well as reaching out to other educational organisations. So I want to be able to do that in the next 5 years. So we've got big plans for it, but it's just going to take a bit more time and investment behind it.
Exactly. Well, the more you put in, the more you get out, is what they always say.
Exactly.
In the immediate future, Thursday night.
Yes.
How are you looking forward to it?
Oh, goodness. I'm so excited. I've got my dress. I'm not really a girly girl, so the fact that I got the email about the hair and makeup, what I like it doing, just something I haven't had before. So it's going to be amazing. And I'm going along with our nutrition partner, Nibble Protein, who actually put me forward for the award. So we'll have a great night. And just to be in the room with so many incredible sports people is such a huge honour. And the platform that it's given the foundation is huge. So really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And we'll end this with sort of the message that the awards themselves try and promote, i.e. sportswomen, or women in sport. How important is it having women there in sport, but also on a prominent level, inspiring others?
Yeah, I think it's the most important thing, and it goes back to sort of what I was saying earlier about my messaging and how my role model was Johnny Wilkinson, who had absolutely nothing to do with the sports that I played. I just enjoyed watching rugby. So the more we can highlight these positive sporting role models, the better it is for the younger generation coming through. We just, if you look at Dina Asher-Smith, who set the athletics world on fire this year, and her message is that she's using her platform to be able to deliver these strong messages about body confidence with young girls and so on. It's incredible. So I hope that everybody in that lineup gets the recognition that they deserve.
Absolutely. We hope that too as well. And we'll round this off and say thank you so much, Alex, for coming and speaking with us on the show. Congratulations again on the nomination, the Grassroots Awards, because it's no easy feat. And I know a lot of work for years gone by has gone into that one nomination as well. So I really hope you enjoy yourself Thursday night. And I wish you all the best as well. The award comes your way in the end, but just to be nominated in the top four, I think, is a properly good achievement in itself. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Sportspiel. You can subscribe on podcast platforms everywhere and find out more about us on our website, sportspielonline.com.